Cormac, say a little prayer for me.
Say a little prayer for me.
You're both quite quiet to me, thankfully. I'm surprised how well you can sing, Cormac.
I can't sing at all, Pete. It's been a lifetime of trying.
Let us be the judge.
Oh, okay. All right. That's a good lesson in life. Hi, I'm Cormac.
And I'm Josh.
Welcome to The Living Project.
Be true, live wild.
Hello, and welcome to episode 21 of the Living Project podcast. Today we're joined by Peter Cox from his home in South London. Pete spoke to us the day after giving plasma to the NHS after suffering COVID-19 earlier in the year. Pete lived a life of adventure, with first winter ascents in the Himalayan mountains, leading expeditions with young people all over the world, and living a family life committed to adventure that seen his boys trek all over the world and share Pete's passion for getting out into the wild, experiencing its awesomeness, both in its place and in the people they encounter on the way.
Peter reflects deeply on his travels and life experiences and tells us that the wild, whether stood on top of a Himalayan peak or sailing big oceans, highlights the impermanence of existence. He says, I need to live every day as I only have a very short time to enjoy this life. It is Peter's humanity, courage and joy in the face of challenge and his love of his family and friends that shine through every word he says.
Pete's an inspiration. We hope you enjoy this one. Yeah, here we go. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
You giving plasma yesterday?
Yes, I give it every Monday morning so they can use my plasma to give to people who are suffering from COVID. So it started off monthly, but they're in short supply, so they asked if I'd come in every fortnight, and now they've got me coming in every week. So,
And are you well now yourself?
Yeah, I caught it on March the 19th, and I was ill for about 4 weeks. But I would say I still suffer from tiredness. So I sleep a lot more, and I take naps a lot more than I used to. But apart from that, I'm fine.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Okay, Pete, so you'll be aware, hopefully, that at The Living Project, we are all about the four elements of water, earth, fire and air. We'd really love to know, right at the start of our conversation, which of those elements do you resonate with the most?
Cormac, it's very clear, it's definitely earth for me. I grew up in South London. My family were all market traders. So my grandfather had a flower store. My father worked Smithfield Market. So our holidays were down to Bognor, to the seaside, or days out to Littlehampton. So I'd never really travelled further afield than that. And then when I was 14, I went on a youth project to Snowdonia. I remember it as clear as anything. I walked up the pig track to the summit of Snowdon on the first day. And on the second day, we walked up to the summit of Egarne via the Devil's Kitchen. And it was just, it was an epiphany. It changed my life. I'd never seen anything so stunning as the Welsh mountains. I'd never seen anything. It just absolutely captured my imagination. And after that day, I just became really focused on grabbing every opportunity to get out into the wild, whether that was back up to Snowdonia or to the Lake District or down to Dartmoor or to the Peak, just to get out into the outdoors and to experience the wild again. It And it then really shaped the rest of my life. Just that weekend away, it was really very, very powerful.
Do you, if you say it's earth, Pete, and it was that powerful, do you feel like that experience gave you a sense of belonging, a place of where you felt you wanted to be? Is that where that link comes from?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I think growing up, I was that youngster who was left against the wall when you were picking the football team. And, you know, that when you're a youngster defines everything, you know, your future marriage prospects, your opportunity to have a career. And so I went for a football trial for an inclusive football team. And I think I'm the only youngster in history not to be accepted into Little League. But I just wasn't very good at competitive sport. And the thing that I found about being out in the mountains was that I was competing with myself. So whether I got to the summit or not was about the personal challenges, both physically and mentally, dealing with fears, dealing with the environment. So it was a competition with myself, really, set against the magnificent environment that I was in.
Yeah, Pete, I lived in London, as did Josh, for many years. And, you know, there is something about London, you know, it's self-contained, isn't it? And it's a hard place to get out of sometimes. So what opportunity presented itself for you, being living in or growing up in East London and now living in South London, to get out of London into the great outdoors? What happened?
Well, I was very lucky that he's still a friend to this day, a chap called Craig Moore, who's actually a police sergeant in Brixton, was running youth projects. And we would meet down by the town hall on a Friday night, and he would drive us, well, on that occasion, up to Snowdonia. But he would also create opportunities for us to go out rock climbing and to you know, go walking and go down to the sandstone in Kent. You know, I think when people work with young people in the outdoors, or they never really know the impact that they're having on that individual's life. And of course, you don't impact on every young person's life, but certainly when Craig took me up to Snowdonia, I don't imagine when he was driving up there that he would have such a profound impact and really shape and the direction that I would go for the rest of my life, really.
Yes, special people. And obviously you then went on to do that for hundreds of young people through leading more than 50 youth expeditions worldwide in an incredible expedition leadership career. But I guess I'm interested in a bit of, while these tales are never chronological, your connection with Earth, your resonance with Earth, this place that gave you belonging and where you found where you could be yourself in the mountains, you know, that experience, that connection to Earth obviously ignited a fire in you. It ignited this love, you say, it changed your life, it drove your direction. So this love of the mountains and getting out there, tell us a little bit about where it took you as a young adult and how those experiences as a young adult shaped you as well.
Well, it's I'd say the passion for the outdoors just grew with me. And when I left school, I did have to get a job. I initially went to work for Barclays Bank. And I remember the first day I was there, I came home with every newspaper and applied for every job in it, because the one thing I did know in life was I wasn't going to be working in the bank. And the first job that I got was with the police. I didn't intend to become a police officer. I just saw it as a short-term filler, really. But I really, I did it for 30 years. It was my career, and it became a way of both enabling and funding me to explore more into the wild and into the outdoors. Police officers are required to work lots of overtime, and you can take that time off, which enabled me to go away for long periods climbing and go on expeditions. And initially that was I was pursuing that very much on my own. I went out to the Alps and climbed Mont Blanc. and peaks out there. And then I ended up in Scotland on the west coast, and learned to ice climb. And while I was there, I bumped into a guy called Mike Warridge, who's just another one of those people who just shaped my life. Mike was a top mountaineer by anyone's standards, although I was oblivious to that when I met him. And we would go out climbing and became good friends and lifelong friends. And then I was about 24. I remember him ringing me up and saying, would I like to go on an expedition to the Karakoram? And I said, oh, that'd be fantastic. And then he said, well, it's a winter expedition. And I said, well, I've never been there in summer. So don't worry. He said, just come out, enjoy the trip, you know, and you know, you can, you know, help out and support a little bit. And the next thing I knew, I was on the top of an unclimbed peak in winter in the Karakoram. And, you know, obviously that was just an amazing experience. But it does, that trip does, for me, it shows how personal the outdoors and the wild is. And because I'd always dreamt that I'd want to come back and show everyone the photographs. And I think it was something like 15 or 20 years after I got back before I showed anyone any of the pictures from that expedition, because they just didn't capture the whole experience, the physical experience, the emotional experience. And even the two-dimensional photos of the mountains didn't capture the elements, the wind, the cold, the effort that you'd put to get there, the experience that you were having with other people. So, it was a very, very powerful experience climbing that peak with Mike. And when I came back, as I say, before I'd gone, I just thought I'd be showing everyone pictures and telling them everything about it. And in reality, I got back and just kept the pictures to myself for a long, long time because they didn't tell the story. And after that, I got invited on lots of trips. I think my next trip was to Nepal, up to the Khumbu. And Mike and I did some first ascents up there on the north face of Khongmazi. And that's where I think I fell in love with the Nepalese people and Nepal. I think we all have, actually.
Yeah.
They're very special.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pete, you've been pushing the boundaries in terms of in mountaineering, both in terms for yourself, but also in terms of the sport of mountaineering. And in reference to what you said earlier, you said that the reason you loved the wild or the mountains was because you were in competition with yourself. So I'm wondering, by this stage in your kind of mid-late 20s, what do you feel you learned about yourself which prepared you for the next stage of your life?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think the going into the mountains taught me to be the person I am, but for lots of different reasons, partly because of the experience of being out on the mountains and having true value in life differently. When you're on a ice face or on a summit in winter, when I climbed to Pop Down Sar with Mike and Lindsay, there was a point where we weren't that sure that we were going to be able to get down. And I think at moments like that, you really appreciate your life and what your life is about. And you can prioritize a lot clearer about what's important to you. I Mike and Lindsay had far more experience than I did, so they were probably a lot more relaxed, but certainly sitting in the dark at, I don't know, over 6,000 meters in the winter in the Karakoram, looking down a sheet of blue ice, particularly when we drove in an ice screw, it was so cold the first ice screw shattered. You know, I really thought that, you know, that this was as far as I was going to go. And that helps you focus, I think, in what your priorities are. I became a lot less materialistic. And I think what I take away is that what I remember is experiences in life. That's what my family now, we've traveled a lot together. And whenever we're together, we always talk about our experiences of travel and of the outdoors and being in the outdoors. We never sit down and say, oh, that was a fantastic three-piece suite we bought in 1984. But I do talk about trips that I was on in 1984. And I think it just focuses what's important in life. But those trips aren't just about the wild. They were about the people that I was with and also the people that I met in those the countries that I was traveling to and shared those experiences with. They taught me so much, I think. And you know, I can reflect on that. But, you know, sitting with people in Nepal, they just have a contentment about them. And being in Pakistan, where people were, villages were coming out to help us and to get us back after some rain had washed the Karakoram Highway, and the people were just coming out to help us get back to Gilgit and get back to Rawalpindi. And when you tried to pay them or offer them anything, they were just almost offended that you should consider it, you know.
The gift of generosity, of spirit, unconditional love, right? Like,
absolutely,
give,
yeah.
Give to give. Pretty, absolutely. It's a pretty powerful thing to experience, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, that's some great, powerful, water-like reflection. Hi guys, just a quick interruption from us. Enjoying today's Ordinarily Inspired chat? Yeah, us too. To join the journey, you can follow us on social media at It's The Living Project. Or if you fancy a really powerful wild experience yourself, check out our website, www.thelivingproject.life, and have a look at our Wild 24 and other stuff you can get involved with. On our website, you can also become a patron. We love making these podcasts, but it takes some effort. And we'd love you to join the community and support our efforts in finding everyday epic people around the world to explore their journey with the wild and to share their experience with us all. www.thelivingproject.life. And that's become a patron. Any amount will be gratefully received. Right then, back to the chat. You touched there on your family. From the pre-work we did with you before, we know that there was a significant shift in your life from, you know, from this journey of self and self-challenge and exploration of the wild and the communities and people around, essentially for you and for your learning and development. In your 30s, you met your wife, Paula.
Yeah.
And her three-year-old son, Jordan.
That's right, yeah.
And you formed a family. You've got two more boys, Seb and Matt. And you've told us that you've replaced mountaineering with being a parent. That's quite a big shift. And what I suppose what I'm after is what did you take from your journey to that point into being a parent, and how was it for you shifting your focus from your own exploration to then being a parent and using those things you learned?
I think with parenting, Matt's just gone off to university at 18, so I've almost reached the end of that chapter. But I think the thing with being a parent is it is reflection. When you look back, that you realise what you were doing at the time and how you were doing it. I think when you are a parent and you're in the midst of it, a lot of it is just you reacting to the environment around you. But I went away. Paula and I were together, but I went away to climb Manaslu. And while I was there, Chris, who later became my best man, asked me where our relationship was going. So it's the first time I've given it some thought. But I did come back and propose to Paula. When I got back from Manaslu, and we got married and had seven Matt, and I did go away on another trip, but I realised that this was very selfish. That, you know, mountaineering is dangerous, and I now had Jordan, and I'd fallen in love with him, and we had a close relationship, and I just didn't think it was fair for a child for me to go off and to do the things that I was doing. So. I stopped climbing at the level that I was and doing the trips that I was. But I didn't want to stop travelling. And we as a family have carried on exploring. So Matt, who's the youngest, had his fourth birthday on a camel in Rajasthan. He was at Everest Base Camp when he was eight. He was in Lhasa in Tibet at 10. I think if he was being, if you were speaking to him now, he'd probably tell you he had the worst ever childhood and why couldn't get a villa in Spain. So we carried on travelling, and I think what I wanted was for them to experience some of the things that had shaped me, really. I think it is a part of the of the being in the wild, but also, as I say, the cultures and the communities that you meet when you're in that environment are special. And I think that we here in the UK can learn so much from people around the world and the way that they live their lives and their values and their cultures. And so I really wanted to share some of that with them and for them to experience it. I think some of the trips when Matt was very young, I don't know, we talk about this, may have had little value. But we were back in Nepal on the Annapurna circuit together. It would have been the year before last. So we trekked around the Annapurna circuit together as a family when Matt was 17. So they're still out and about and they're still travelling. And if it hadn't been for COVID, Matt was going to go up to Manali with his friends and trek across the Pimpavati Pass across the Spiti Valley, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with, and it's an absolutely stunning place. And that trek's an amazing trek. It's become a bit of a rite of passage for the boys. So Jordan did it when he was 18 with his friends. Seb's done it with his friends, and Matt was due. But Matt's got it on hold at the moment due to COVID. But I'm sure he will go back and revisit it.
Yeah, I love that. You said if he was here now, he'd say he had the worst childhood ever. Yet with his mates, he's going out to Manali to do an epic trek in the foothills of the, you know, in the mountains.
Yeah, absolutely. And last year, we went out to the Alps together last year, and we went ice climbing down on the Murder Glass, and went and stood on some easy 4,000 meter peaks. You know, get the climb of Matterhorn, and then go up to the top of the Breithorn and that kind of thing. And there he was dragging me up the snow slopes to the summits that I'd stood on, I don't know, 30 years earlier. So that was quite a nice experience to share with him, with him in the driving seat and dragging me up ice climbs and up to the summit.
That's wonderful, Peter. You've definitely passed on the kind of the ice axe, so to speak, to your family, your sons, and they seem to be carrying it forward. But you know, it's interesting. We are in this strange time, aren't we? You mentioned that we're not traveling at the moment. Has that given you time to reflect more on the power of travel, and when we say travel, you know, the type of travel you're talking about, which means connecting with communities and getting out into the wild, you know, what have you been able to reflect on recently, and why is this important for us as a species, do you think?
This break, I think it's the best way of referring to it, is I think provided me with a opportunity to reflect on my life. We do, as I say, when we're together, we always look back. But I've been thinking about some of my experiences, and thinking about where I want to go from here and what we want to do next. And it's more of the same, but done differently. I think there's a reality that I'm getting older, so summits are probably out of reach now. But I still want to travel, and I still want to explore. As I say, it's those conversations that I've had with people in different cultures that really shaped so much of my thinking and so much of my journey up to now and who I am. I think going forwards, that, you know, Paula and I have got this dream of going off traveling with each other in a couple of years' time, just either leaving the house to the boys or shutting doors on it and not worrying about it for as long as we can keep going, really. So that's really an adventure that we're planning and focusing on. And as I said, it's really about going to, you know, places that are perhaps not as well trodden now, and just stopping in villages that aren't there. You know, we're not visiting it because it's the Taj Mahal. We're visiting it because we've just stopped somewhere on the road and we've found a village and a community, and you know, to explore that and to meet and explore the people and experience and learn from them, really.
So you've mentioned that a few times, the people you've learned from, the communities you meet. Is there a standout conversation or standout philosophy that you try and live with or resonates with you, or that you remember that's had a profound impact?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the Buddhist culture. I stress, I think I said to you, I'm definitely not a Buddhist. I drink far too much red wine and indulge in too many fillet steaks, but I'm fascinated by their contentment. And I started to talk to monks and to Nepalese people who were Buddhist, and I was learning about detachment, and I was thinking what a fantastic concept this is, and how us always striving for the next happiness creates highs and ultimately lows. So we never really feel happy about life because we're always chasing that next high. But I couldn't understand the concept of detachment with my children. You know, that just didn't make sense. And I sat with a monk once and he said to me, well, when a child's walking along the top of a wall and the parent shouts for the child to get down, who are they frightened for? And I obviously answered, the child. They're frightened for the child. And he said, well, that can't be the case. He said, because the parent couldn't feel the pain if they fell, and he couldn't experience their death. What the parent's frightened of is their own pain, of having to see the child suffer. And he said that when we tell a child to climb down from the wall, we're limiting their experience of life, and that we're protecting ourselves in doing that. And I've tried to embrace this. It's quite hard to embrace when you're a parent, to be honest with you. And it's not to be reckless. I don't think he was advocating being reckless, but I remember the first time I dipped my toe in the water, and I was on a Via Ferrata in the Durance Gorge. I think Matt was about 6 or 7, and I got his harness on, and he seemed really confident, and off he went up this great big limestone wall on his own, clipping himself in and out all the way up to, you know, several hundred meters up the gorge to the top. And I was following him some distance behind, but I certainly wasn't there to clip him or to help him or to assist him. And I've got to tell you, I was in absolute agony. I was terrified. But I thought, if I tell him to come down and I stop him climbing, all I'm doing is limiting his experience of life. So I've tried to put that into practice with the boys. I've tried to let them go off and take risks and to explore, you know, with the knowledge of how to do things safely. And so I think one of the challenges as a parent has been trying to understand what that monk was saying and put it into practice.
Yeah, Peter, you know, it'd be amiss of us not to recognise that, you know, we all know each other because we have worked for World Challenge, which is a youth expedition company. And I'm just wondering, you know, that is all about experiential learning, and they may not be your or our own children, but we have a kind of parental responsibility, don't we, when we work with these young people and take them overseas. And we want to give them an experiential learning because we believe that it's through doing things that people truly, truly learn. Do you think that philosophy that was passed down to you from the Buddhist monk, do you think that's also something that you've been able to bring into play leading your expeditions with young people overseas? And do you think it's equally important when working with other people's children as opposed to just your own?
I think you've got a responsibility when you're working with other people's children, which means I wouldn't necessarily treat them exactly as I have with Matt and Seb, but I think I could tell you, if you don't mind me just telling you about, I think my first World Challenge trip to Manali, and the young people there went out and bought all the equipment that they needed. So we arrived in Manali, and And they were going to trek across the Spitty Valley. I didn't know it was my first time to go across the Pimpapati Pass myself. And they went out and bought everything that they needed, but they bought pots and pans as though they were cooking in their kitchen at home. And they met the Sirdar that evening and the cook, and he said, "You bought pots that are 20 centimetres across. I need pots that are 60 centimetres across. And you bought bags of rice that are 1 kilo. I need bags of rice that are 20 kilo. So they came to me that evening and said, "Look, Peter, we've bought all the wrong stuff. We've blown the budget." And the best I think I could come up with was, "Yeah, I think you're right." And I said, "Look, let's go to bed and we'll sort about it, talk about it in the morning, and we'll find a solution." My solution was to ring World Challenge and ask for more money. But I woke up in the morning and they'd set up a stall in the market in the middle of Manali, selling kitchen equipment and bags of rice. And all the local people had got into the spirit of it and were bidding well over the top for the stuff that they were selling. And they ended up selling and recouping all the money. But I think the whole point of that story is that anything that I had suggested would have lacked the courage and the inventiveness of what the solution that they came up with. And I think that, you know, the thing about those kind of experiences with young people is that they can really, really take risks. And there was a risk. They found their own solution to being out of budget. They went and they sold everything in the market. And I would never have had the courage to do that. And as I say, my solution would have been something really tame, like ringing World Challenge and asking for more money. And there they were, just, you know, in the middle of this market, saying, you know, "I'm not asking 10 rupees. I'm not asking 20 rupees. I'm asking 5 rupees and I'm throwing in a bag of rice." And they sold the lot, you know. It was like an East End. They were from Essex as well, which I think gave them the... they had that edge, perhaps.
Pete, I love listening to you because we've touched on, some things that shaped you, but not, you know, not necessarily kind of, you know, hashtagged those events, but talked about the values and the beliefs that some of your journey has shaped you on. And we really have only touched on that. You know, I know you're also a highly qualified, passionate, skilled yacht master. You've had a relation, you've kayaked a lot, you know, you really have lived with the wild, but also clearly lived with the wild of yourself and allowed yourself to go on that journey and explored that journey clearly with a passion for other people, you know, whether that comes from your childhood experience of being the kid stood against the wall, or whether it comes from your, you know, the communities that you've met along the way. It's very clear that you really love enabling other people to explore themselves and as you said with that market story, find their own solutions and develop who they are. I suppose a question I really want to ask is for you, you've been in some of the highest, most dangerous mountains in the world. You've got winter ascents. You've sailed big oceans. You've led expeditions where you have big responsibility for young people. You've looked at huge rock faces. You've looked at massive waves on boats. What's the main lesson do you think that the wild has taught you about humanity?
I think it's. I think one of the things that I found interesting, I really enjoyed your podcast, and I think I was nervous about today because I've never done anything as, I've never got on a bike and ended up in New Zealand or had the resilience to take my whitewater rafting company and relaunch it in Sri Lanka, get knocked down and get up again. But I think my personal reflection is my relationship with water, I think, has been one of complete respect and fear. I was very lucky. As I say, I met Mike Warridge, and the thing about a few of the people who have shaped my life is that these are people who could only ever see opportunity. They were only ever positive. They only, could only ever think of reasons why we should do things. And I took a phone call from Mike once, and he said, "You owe me £400. Could you send it to me?" And I said, "Mike, what do I owe you £400 for?" He says, "Your whitewater kayak." Mm-hmm. I said, "I don't kayak, Mike." He said, "Well, you do now." And the next thing I knew, I was coming down a whitewater river in Snowdonia with Mike in my brand new kayak that I just bought. And I think what's different for me about the water is the fact that I don't ever feel in control when I'm in the water. I'm sure a better kayaker would, but I remember going across the Bay of Biscay. I got an opportunity to take a boat down, to crew a boat down to Gibraltar. We got caught in a big storm out in Biscay, which I'm sure you're aware it is. And I just thought, whether I'm kayaking or whether I'm out in the sea, that the sea and the water can take your life at a moment's notice. And it's just really taught me to value every day and to make the most of every day. I could tell you the story. I took Jordan and his friends up to Everest Base Camp when they were 15, 16. He was in a rugby team, and all the lads from the rugby team came. And there was a young lad, his name was Matt, I'm sure his mum wouldn't mind me mentioning. He came on his own, so he had no parents and no adults to look after him. So he flew to Kathmandu and then took that flight up to Lukla that we all fear in equal measure.
Yeah.
And then he trekked up to Everest Base Camp, and he was just a super strong member of the team. And, you know, so he was only, 15, 16. And I'm sure that his mum got a load of feedback, either spoken or non-verbal, about letting him go and putting him at risk. And, you know, the flight into Lukla's dangerous and altitude's dangerous, and trekking up to Everest Base Camp could be dangerous, and he's on his own. And you know, absolute respect to her. She took a leaf out of that Buddhist monk's book and let him go. I'm sure she was terrified every day he was away. And we interestingly got caught up when the king, just before the king got deposed, we got back to Kathmandu, and we were all under house arrest in a hotel. So it was a pretty adventurous trip, and there was lots in there that you would have said, well, a young person shouldn't have experienced that. But, you know, very sadly, 2 years later, Matt died of cancer. And of course, his mum, you know, reflected that if he hadn't, you know, by going on that trip, he absolutely experienced, you know, all the things that I've just been talking about, and he really experienced life. And if he hadn't have gone, we would have still been there 2 years later when he very sadly died. And for me, the impermanence of life is the thing that I think my reflection about water and about that experience is that we only have today, so we have to make the most of it. Yes, of course, have a look into the future. I've been talking about my plans with Paula for the future, but we should never use the future as a reason not to do something today. So I think that's, for me, that's what I've learned. Is that you know have plans for the future, but never use that as an excuse not to be doing it now.
And that, to me, sounds like a wonderful place to wrap up this brilliant conversation. Pete, thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us what you have today.
You kind of shared a really profound understanding of you know, through your story, of how you see your life in the wild. And I really believe that anyone listening to this will thoroughly enjoy it, and most importantly, take something away from the experience of having a conversation with you, in conversation with us today, Pete. So awesome. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Josh Cormack. Thanks very much for inviting me, and thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to come and chat to you guys. I always enjoy being in your company, so thank you very much. And thanks again for doing the podcast. They're certainly a highlight of my week, and I've enjoyed listening to everyone, and I've been learning a lot from the podcast as well. I'm opening a bottle of red now.
Wow, what a conversation with Pete. We hope you enjoyed that. We've just touched on Pete's experience with the wild. From a powerful experience as a as a child, finding Snowdonia and the mountains and the earth that gave him a sense of belonging, that enabled him to spread his wings, head out into the mountains around the world, complete first ascents of winter routes, explore cultures, fall in love with the Nepalese people, that these wild experiences shaped him as a parent and enabled him and encouraged him to share that relationship with the wild with future generations of young people. The wild is clearly a powerful part of Pete's journey. I'm wondering what in the wild is part of yours. Thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next time.
And in the meantime,
be true, live wild.
You've been listening to The Living Project with Josh Bulpin and Cormac Davey.
Enjoyed it? Please subscribe, follow, rate, and share with everyone you know. See you next time.
Be true, live wild.